I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I am delighted to have Leslie Verner. Some of you may know her better by the title of her blog, Scraping Raisins, and we'll get into why that name in just a moment. But specifically, I'm wanting to talk with Leslie today because I happen to get in on a whole month of blog posts that she was doing in the month of March. She called it 31 Days of Woke. And I think I maybe spotted it on Twitter first and thought, time to talk to Leslie. So Leslie is with us, and welcome, Leslie, to Faith Conversations.
Thank you, Anita.
And well, good to have you. And for people that are unfamiliar with you and your work, just let's just start with the personal stuff. So tell about where you live and what your life kind of looks like now, i.e. children, et cetera.
Right. Yeah. It's very exciting. My life right now is in Colorado, and in northern Colorado. We moved here about 2 years ago from the city of Chicago. And before I had kids, I was a teacher. I taught middle school mostly, and I lived in China until I met my husband, who's an actor. And we got married a little later in life, so we started having kids right away and had three kids in 4 years. And so that is basically what I'm doing right now.
Three kids, 4 years, I'm tired.
Yeah.
they're not my kids. I'm just listening to them. So, yeah. I mean, you're very much living the mom life, the parenting life currently, you know, with young kids, it's a lot more intense, but you're still writing. And and how long have you been doing your blog?
Less than 2 years, actually. So not very long, but I've been kind of, you know, I think a lot of writers say they've been writing their whole life.
Yes.
So it was just a matter of time, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Question for you. So I happened upon 31 Days of Woke, and actually I got to know you, found out who you were, because one day you tagged me in a Twitter post of yours about people that have written or done podcasts on race-related topics. And I thought, okay, I need to know who Leslie Verner is. And that's when I went looking you up. And then I came across, and then I saw that you wrote sometimes for the She Loves magazine blog, which I love, She Loves, and started looking at your blog. And then 31 Days of Woke came along, and that was like the tipping point. I thought, I gotta talk to Leslie.
Yeah.
And I've got, I have a lot of questions for you. We're going to get into your month of posts and the why of that. But I'm curious, you know, for people to be writing on what you are, and especially a concentrated month worth that you wrote on race, what shaped your justice heart? Was it family you grew up in? Well, I'm curious.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder that too. I mean, I grew up in a pretty, you know, middle-class suburban home in Tampa, Florida. I mean, Tampa, now that I've moved to Colorado, Tampa is more diverse than I realized at the time. But I always wanted to go overseas. So since I was 16, I even remember sitting in my backyard, you know, looking at the airplanes, you know, going over our house, thinking like, when can I be on one of those? I want to go away from here. So
and what planted that desire in you?
I think it was reading. I think I read, you know, I was one of those, you know, kind of nerdy Christian girls that read all the missionary biographies. I think it was that. I mean, it was, which now as an adult I'm a little more jaded about, but I you know, I think it was just, it seemed so exciting to, you know, I wanted to do the big things for God, and the church we build at missionaries. So of course that means being a missionary. So.
Well, and to be honest, I'll just throw this out there for, you know, I don't know what stream of evangelicalism you were raised in, though I have probably a good idea. But where I was raised, it seemed like single missionary ladies were the only ones that really got to go on and lead and do the exciting adventurous stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was very drawn to them as well. So in some ways, I think it's no big surprise, you know. Yeah. To hear some of that come out in you. And, you know, some of those books were pretty exciting. A lot of very interesting things happened and were okay for women to be doing and to be a part of. So I get how that seed was planted in that way. Why today? Because that's one thing, to be interested in going overseas, to be connected to a culture different than the one you were raised in, etc. But why is the race issue so important to you today?
I think, you know,
because a few years have come and gone since that seed was planted in as a high schooler.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's what, we'll talk more about that, I think, but the series, I kind of comb back through my past and my different cross-cultural experiences and kind of relive them in light of what I know now. And I had so many opportunities to be with people of color and other cultures throughout my experience that I wasn't aware of a lot, you know?
Sure. So. Well, yeah. And let me interject that indeed you did get to go overseas. You know, you're not currently still living there, but you have spent time in a variety of cultures. One for a little bit more extended period in China. That would be your the longest. So those experiences did come your way and have to have shaped you. I think anytime, especially in American, anytime or anyone in the West, anytime we go to a different culture, hopefully and mostly it does shape us.
Depending
on which part of that culture we get to see. So now I'll kind of come back to that. Coming back from China, you meet this actor and marry him and have kids, and you're sort of planted now in white suburbia.
So I have a post called White People Are Boring, which a lot of people clicked on because, I mean, that's kind of how I've always felt. It just seems like other cultures, especially Eastern cultures, are just, there's so many wonderful things. Like, you know, they're so focused on family and community and food and you know, just dropping by. And I mean, it's a humongous generalization to say that's true about all Eastern cultures. But I would say in general, a lot of non-Western cultures are more focused on community and, you know, and of course, they have their own problems, too. But and so in the States, I'm like, we're much more individualistic and independent, and we like to plan things a month in advance, you know, so
we're too.
After living overseas. Yeah. It was a little bit hard to live back in the States.
I'm going to throw this in there as a question, not to get us off track, but do you also, I also am wondering if, you think that's because we are a much more transient society here in America. We're not born and raised and stay in the same home we, you know, grew up in till the day we die. We move cross country. I'm 56. The last time I lived near family, I was 15. You know, so, I mean, I think
it's
a piece
part
of it,
our
too.
Culture now. Right? Yeah, right. So, I don't think I answered your question. But.
Well, that's because I keep interrupting, Leslie. You'll find that a habit. I mean, I get thinking about things that even as you say them and, you know, thinking that's part of why we are living things out the way we do because our society is so transient. But so let's go back to this, why race is such an important issue for you today. You have had cross-cultural experience, and I'll leave you to respond more now.
Yeah, I think it's, my first year teaching, I taught in the inner city of Chicago, and I had experience in college. I went to Wheaton College outside of the city, and we would go into the city every Saturday to do a girls' club, and so I had a bit of exposure And then my very first year teaching was in North Lawndale, 100% African-American school. I wrote about it in the series, but it was very eye-opening. I mean, of course, I thought I was going to change the world and be like Michelle Pfeiffer and, you know, dangerous minds. In fact, I was telling someone this story recently, and they were like, it's just like that movie. And I'm like, no, my experience was nothing like that movie. Like, no, it wasn't. It was a huge wake-up call. And just to realize that it was such a bigger issue. I mean, it was very discouraging, actually, teaching there, because I just saw there's so many issues. Like, one teacher, no matter what the race, I mean, of the teacher, is not going to change these problems that are so ingrained. So yeah. I think that started it a bit. Although I just kind of, I felt like I wasn't cut out for that. And then, strangely, just
cut out for teaching, cut out for teaching, or cut out for teaching cross culturally, kind of.
I think cut out for teaching in a all African American school.
Okay.
I think I would have. I may. Anyway, I don't know. I think it was very opening. I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. But strangely enough, like, these race issues haven't really started. They hadn't started to impact me until we moved to Colorado, and we moved from the city of Chicago, a very diverse area of the city, to this area that's 93% white. And, you know, of course, I miss cultures of all kinds, you know, and just different kinds of people. But it really started, I guess, through reading a couple of books and then listening to a bunch of podcasts. Because when we first moved here, I would just drive around in the car with my kids napping. And so that was like the only way my son would nap. And so, you know, I'm like, all right, everybody get in the car. You know, I only had two kids then, and I was pregnant. I guess I wasn't pregnant yet, but I had two kids, and just buckle them up and they'd fall asleep in the car. And I would just be like driving through the mountains, like weeping, you know,
yes.
Listening to these podcasts, you know, and you know, some of yours too. And I feel like you're on a similar journey, it seems like. And I think just, really, I mean, that's why part of the reason I like the word woke, because it's like a second sight almost. I've seen my world and had lots of relationships with African Americans and been in all sorts of cultures, but all of a sudden I'm just starting to see the world differently. And I think it was that. And then I read Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson, and that was, yeah, it just made a huge impact on me. And started reading more articles and things like that. So I think it's been a slow process, but I think it's just. And also, last January, I opened a Twitter account, and I hadn't had Twitter before.
Ah,
and
okay.
I tried, you know, it sounds weird because I am like, I like to follow as many people of color as I can. And so, because that's something I can control, like if it's a way I can desegregate my social media.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Facebook, you have to friend somebody usually, but that, I'm like, they don't know. I mean, I can follow anybody I want,
right?
So
right,
I don't just follow anybody just because of their skin color, but I look to see if what they're saying is things I want to be reading about and whatever.
Right.
But I feel like it gives me like an ear into the world of people of color that I wouldn't interact with otherwise, because I live in an all white area. So,
you know, it was interesting. I had read that about your move to Colorado, and how kind of, you know, shocking in a way it was to realize the lack of diversity. Similarly, yeah. My husband and I just made this move to Florida, into a less diverse place, Sarasota.
Yeah.
And I think the percentage, of Caucasians in this county, I think it's similar to the percentage you just gave, 93%, and it was absolutely shocking to me. I've visited my parents here for many years, but it just hadn't registered, evidently, and this was where we needed to be, and so we weren't necessarily looking at some of those other things, because it was a move that was going to happen regardless. But I just found myself looking around and thinking, where is this population? And then talking with people and saying, oh, we're from Chicago, and having them like have this look of horror because all they're hearing in the news is the violence. And then, as I just listened to you say that teaching in inner city Chicago in the Lawndale neighborhood, largely African-American neighborhood, was a wake-up call or eye-opening, or, you know, the, I guess eye-opening. I thought it was really eye-opening to me as I heard people from other places, not Chicago, tell me how to solve the huge issues, which are not singular there.
Right.
They're so multifaceted and
complex,
layered and complex, but, you know, they had one, two, three things to do, and then it would all be fine.
No.
So my husband and I, especially my husband, he, having worked in inner city Chicago and in East Garfield Park for a number of years, has had some fuller conversations with people and has probably had the stamina to stay in those conversations better than I have.
Right.
And so I appreciate that. Didn't know that's part was going to be part of our mission coming down here. That wasn't necessarily on our radar, but I think issues of justice certainly have always been important to me, kind of the broad brushstroke of justice, race certainly coming under that umbrella. One of the posts, well, let me ask this question first before I get into posts. Do you think we are, where are we in this? Are we still moving forward in a healthy way in this country? That's a huge question. Even as I read it to you. Whew.
I know. Which, I mean, as a white woman, I feel like I don't have a right to really even say. But, I mean, based on the podcast that I'm listening to, which are people of color speaking, and Twitter and things like that, I mean, it seems... I feel like with what I'm hearing is that with the election, people feel like there were a lot of steps backwards.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I obviously don't want to speak for any community, especially not one that I don't represent. But that's the general feeling that I get when I read Twitter and when I listen to all these podcasts
and,
of people of color.
And I don't want to ask you to speak for people that you cannot. I'm curious... just as a white person, what you think, if there is any forward, if there is forward movement in a healthy way still happening?
I think yes. I mean, so I joined this group that is fantastic, called Be the Bridge, and it's a Facebook group. And so last year, 2016. The week of the shootings in July was when I think that's the week that I put out a post sharing some race resources for white people, 70 plus race resources. And a friend saw that I was doing that, and he added me to this group, Be the Bridge.
Okay.
And at the time, they had about 1,000 members, and then now they have over 10,000 members.
Oh, wow.
And it's a Christian group, and it's a mix of people of color and white people. And it is, they just have some really important conversations about race in just such a grace-filled way. It's so, you know, it's just a really safe place for people like me to just go on there and say, how should I be thinking about this? Or someone posted this article on Facebook and it just rubbed me wrong, but I just can't see it. Can you help me?
Mm.
And people, it's just a place where people of color will, you know, answer so graciously and be like, okay, this is offensive, and here is why you are right in thinking that, or you weren't even considering this. And it's something that I check every day. It's a really valuable group, and they don't even let you, interact or post for 3 months because they ask you to just go on.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm, just like watch and listen. And it's just a very, I think the key, especially for white people, is humility and listening. And, you know, we want to do stuff. We want to do something, you know. And I think that's American. That's the American way, is like, what can I do?
Right.
But we're like, once we start to see a problem, we're like, what can we do to fix it?
Right.
So, but in that group, it's very much like, okay, so let's learn. Let's like just even go back and learn, relearn some history. Mm-hmm. Just listen to what people are saying. And so.
Even hearing you talk about this group, it also sounds to me like it could be a wonderful place, especially with sitting there reading, watching, listening for three months, a good place for people who are also afraid to step in and say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question, because I do think that that is still prevalent and prevalent fear in a lot of white people, especially a little bit fearful. To misstep and a grace-filled place to watch and read and listen sounds like it is. Yeah,
and I was really afraid to even start writing about this stuff. You know, I remember a year ago, I was like, oh, I think I need to write about this. And, you know, I just had that feeling of like, what right do I have? First of all, what right do I have to write about it? And then second of all, what if I say something stupid, you know, or offensive? And so this group is just... it's just good because a lot of people, and things that I've heard, you know, a lot of people of color are like, you know what, you are going to say something stupid and offensive, but it's okay. You know, like that's how we're going to learn. And I mean, maybe not everyone is feeling that way, but I've heard that a lot, just that message to white people, like, it's okay. You're going to mess up and that's okay. But it's important that we talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's why I started even writing about this to begin with, because after I wrote one post, an African-American friend of my husband's he thanked me. He was just like, thank you. He's like, it's kind of tiring always coming from people of color. And so I think it's important that it come from white people, you know, every once in a while. So,
yeah, I have heard that before and have sensed that as well. I remember when I first started doing some radio programs about, before I did the podcast, about race issues and feeling the same way, like, I don't know what on earth I'm doing, but I just knew that it was important and had a variety of African-American voices join in the conversation and be a part of those kinds of conversations. And, and I think I was maybe... this is an understatement, but I was a bit appalled at the response at that point from listeners. I just was shocked by it, which again said to me, oh, wow, this is to say that this is needed. These conversations are needed in this kind of forum was an understatement. It really was shocking to me. And that with humility, move forward and know that you will say some wrong things. But I love the thought of this Be the Bridge Facebook group and the possibility that raises. Also, in case people missed it, you mentioned a post, 70 plus race resources for white people. I also see another one, 80 plus more race resources for white people. Those are on your website, on your blog site. I will link those. Folks, if you forget your site, which is, go ahead, what's your site?
It's scrapingraisins.com.
Okay, scrapingraisins.com. I'll link all of the things that we're talking about today, as usual. Maybe, I don't know if we're going backward or not, but where did Scraping Raisins come from, the name?
I wish it had a more exciting answer.
Yeah, that's okay.
It was mainly just because I'm a runner, and it seems like when I go running is when I come up with ideas. And I also think in pictures, maybe like a lot of writers do. And so in my mind, it was like the thoughts coming out of my head were like, if you're just trying to get those raisins out of the box, it's like all those unstuck raisins are just getting out. So it's when you scrape them all out.
That's funny.
I know. I thought I needed to sit with it and come up with a more profound, you know, metaphor for raisin. But
well, you know what, it's memorable because I remember when I saw you on Twitter, I remembered Scraping Raisins. That was like, okay,
well, that's why I kind of kept it. I mean,
absolutely,
because I feel like someone might forget Leslie Verner, but they probably wouldn't forget Scraping Raisins.
And your tagline, do justly, love mercy, walk humbly. I like that as well. All right. Well, let's move to 31 Days of Woke. And woke is a word, you know, you gave a little definition, but it's one that at least I think has been really associated in more recent days with Black Lives Matter movement. And I don't know if you would say that.
I didn't talk a lot about the history of it, but I did research it a bit before I called my, you know, my series that. Seemed like it started with a song, and it's, it was associated more with the Black Lives Matter movement. But I know it's been kind of adopted now, too, I think, by lots of people. And I've seen it applied for white people, but also African-American people. I mean, it seems like it's got, I don't know. I might regret using it because I think it might go out of vogue. But a friend of mine who's African American, I gave her like a list of things that I should call it, and she's like, "Call it that." So I'll blame her.
Good enough.
A bad thing.
You know what? I think it's one thing to be woke, but it's another thing to stay woke.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I've been using the hashtag get woke, stay woke. You know, because I'm never gonna write I am woke because I never will be. So I think it's,
cause I'm highly through this, podcast, I'm highly encouraging people to read your entire series. So I would love for the podcast just to kind of give, some highlights. What can people expect? What are some of the things that you write about in the series? And I think huge undertaking to write every day. I mean, that was big. I mean, kudos to you.
I know. Well, my husband's in a show right now as an actor.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I have every night, you know, free because he had 4 or 5 rehearsals in, you know, a week. Why not throw something else in the mix and write about a light topic for a while?
Yeah.
Anyway. So it's kind of it's kind of autobiography if you're going to read it. And it's not like it's in a great chronological order or anything, but I kind of was just, the word that kept coming to mind was excavating. Like I was excavating my past for perceptions and views that I had about my own whiteness. And so I have, you know, a missions background and going overseas. And so I kind of went back through some of those experiences also because, I mean, honestly, I don't feel like I read about that too often, but I mean, that has huge implications when you go overseas, the fact that you're white. And so I talk about what it felt like to be white when I lived in Uganda for 6 months, you know, it was a, you know, colonial country. And so there's a lot of baggage connected to being white, and also in China, just feeling, I mean, the truth is in a lot of countries, if you're white, and English speaking, you're really put on a pedestal. And so just thinking back through some of those feelings that I had, teaching in inner city. And so I kind of went back through some of my own experiences, but then through it, I also shared about a few books and podcasts that I have appreciated and a few poems that no one needs to read. Mainly because I was like, well, I have these and I'm really tired right now, so I guess I have to publish these poems that no one has ever read before.
They're reading them now.
No, I know, right?
Well, but you know, even hearing you use that term, excavating your past, excavating your white history, your whiteness, history of whiteness. What I love about that, I think it models some terrific things for the rest of us, because I think that's a something that we, each of us individually, can do, because it's a reality. Our whiteness is a reality. Where have we come from? What was said about race, class, ethnicity? What was said in our family of origin? What messages did we receive? And then what kind of privilege, you know, what does white privilege, what did white privilege look like in my background, in your background? And, you know, I mean, I think these are the kind of posts, if people are reading them, that lead us to do some of the same excavational work. And I really appreciate that. You know, it's not just reading someone else's experience. Hopefully, it's posing that question and what of your experience? What, you know, I think that's really important. And I hope that it does prompt others to take that deeper look and see where that leads them. I think that's really important. So that's another reason that I really appreciate it. One of the other things, I'll never forget my husband. I can't remember the exact scenario, but I'm sure it was a specific horrific shooting event in Chicago. I'm pretty sure it was Laquan McDonald. So where people from largely a white church were asking him, you know, how do African Americans feel, or whatever the adjective is. And I remember him saying, oh, and so I'm to speak for an entire race, sort of like what I was asking you at the beginning. You know, we can't do that. You can't speak for an entire race, let alone one that's not yours.
Right.
You know, and I just remember hearing him say one of the things that he said to people is, you need to expand your friendship horizons. You need to, you know, not have that one black friend that you sort of know at work. No, you know, we each need to have a variety of friends in our world, those that don't look like, talk like, act like, or even believe like we do. You know, and what does that look like? And that may be more of a challenge depending on where you live. I understand that. But there are still ways to make that happen and to cultivate that. I don't want to make that happen. That's not the right word. But to cultivate relationships with others that they will enrich your life, open your eyes. And but that takes time, effort, energy. It's not always comfortable, you know, all kinds of things.
Right.
You know, how do you relate to that statement? You know, I'm sure that you've referred to this African-American friend or multiple African-American friends. Did that change your perspective as well, opening up your friendship base?
I think yes. And I think that's where I started. When I first started thinking about race and writing, I thought, you know, it's just about making friendships, you know, building relationships with people who are different from me. But then I feel like the more I'm learning, the more I'm realizing it's got to be more than that. I'm not sure what does a minivan driving mom in all white Colorado do? I'm not really sure, but I think it's going to take more than just my two friends, you know, that I've met to change it. So I think what I'm getting at is that it's much more structural than I realized. And I write about that at the very end. We're buying a house right now. And so all the metaphors I'm thinking in lately have to do with houses. You know, as I'm writing, I'm like, and another house one. You know, and just thinking about, like, we're all living in a house that's cracked at the foundation. And yet we're trying to paint the walls and we're trying to remodel the kitchen, but the foundation is actually cracked. And I think I heard it. I can't remember who it was. Someone on your podcast who had said there were 15 generations of slavery and only 5 generations since that time. And so she said something like 5 generations of freedom can't erase 15 generations of slavery.
Yes.
I should have looked it up.
Lisa Harper, I bet, said that.
Yes. She was, And I just kind of, I don't know, really resonated with me because I never thought of it in those terms, you know? And so, you know, for the series, I interviewed my mom because she grew up in Georgia and they had house help and her dad was a doctor and there was a separate waiting room for, you know, African-American people and white people. And so it was really interesting just interviewing her, but thinking, how can that not seep into me? You know, I mean, how can that history not have an effect on me? So I think, the more I learn, the more I'm just realizing it's a structural issue, and I don't know. I don't have no idea what to do, but it's just
To keep writing about it and talking about it.
Yeah, and I think the more we talk about it, the more free we are. I mean, because even talking to like my mom, she's like, mm-hmm. "Can I say mm-hmm. black people?" You know, and I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine." I mean, so I think the more we talk about the issues, the more we feel comfortable talking about the issues. And mm-hmm. I don't know if talk leads to anything, but hopefully. Mm-hmm. It'll change the way we think and the way we teach our children, you know, and the way they think.
Yes. Speaking of teaching our children, mm-hmm. One of the posts, I think it was the post that really that I grabbed onto that helped me realize you were doing writing every day of the month of March, and it was trying to find it. How to have conversations with your kids about race. And maybe that wasn't mm-hmm. even one of the posts for this month.
No, there was. I shared some resources, and then I forget what I did exactly, but one of them I shared the transcript of what I did with my children. I videotaped us and shared kind of what we talked about. So
I love that. And then you went on to say, here are some ways that you can talk with your children. I'd love for you to even, can you think of a couple of those that you've done with your kids that you can suggest?
Yeah. Well, first of all, some of these ideas I got from a website, which is called Raising Race Conscious Children, nice. And it's raceconscious.org.
Okay.
It's on some of my list of resources, but so they have a lot of great ideas about kind of scripts, even like ways you can talk to your kids and how you can say it and stuff. So before I even talked to my kids, you know, much, I kind of researched a bit. So, because I grew up in the colorblind, you know, era of like, well, let's just not talk about race. It's not polite. We're all the same anyway. And it just causes disunity if we talk about it. So I feel like I'm kind of having to teach myself how to talk to my kids about it because we didn't talk about it as growing up. So my son is only 4.5 and my daughter's 2.5.
Yeah, need to make that point. It's not like, you know, so these kinds of conversations. But you made the point, which I appreciated, is now is when you start. You know, this starts immediately. You don't wait till you've got a 13-year-old. No.
Right.
So I appreciated that point as well.
Yeah. So, so we're at the very beginning of talking about it, and I feel like I'm fumbling around, you know, but it was, it kind of came about that I realized I needed to talk to him about it, because I thought, well, if they're not noticing race, I'm not going to bring it up, you know. I don't want to have to explain that there's this horrific part of humanity where people exclude others based on the color of their skin. Like, I just wanted them to stay innocent. So, but meanwhile, I'm listening to tons of podcasts and writing about it and reading about it. And, you know, in the middle of that, actually the week that I put out my 80 plus race resources was the week my son told me he couldn't be friends with another kid because of the color of his skin. And I was like, I was driving and I didn't even know what to say. You know, I wanted to just start crying because here it, this issue that had become so close to my heart, and my son is just like, well, I can't be friends with him anymore because he has black skin. And I was like, I had no idea what to say, you know. I was just like, no, that's
the bigger question is let's get to the bottom of this. Where did this come from? What did you know?
Right. Well, yeah. And then I thought, how did he even know that terminology of mm-hmm. black and white? Because mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I remember I was like, kids aren't, nobody's black skin, you know. The first boy I ever liked was African American. My mom was asking me about him, and she said, is he black? And I said, no, he has brown skin, you know, he's not black. So I just thought, for my son, right away I was like, did they talk about it at school? What, you know, and was somebody telling you? And then later, you know, my family was like, it was probably your podcast, because you've been listening to all of these podcasts about race, and he's listening. So but then I realized I'm like, I need to be intentional about talking to him about it. So
that opened the door for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, since then he hasn't said anything like that. I mean, it's just.
Sure.
Nobody wants your kid to say that. I mean, so, So anyway, so that's, I kind of researched before I, had a conversation with them. And then it's, you know, the first of many conversations. Oh, and we've had more since then.
Yeah. What's the response been? What kind of response have you gotten from your 31 Days of Woke? Which I know people, you know, I don't tend to read every day. And so sometimes I go back and pick up things. It's like podcasts. You know, I might post it on a specific day, but it might be 3 weeks later when someone listens and responds. So I know that.
Yeah.
To ask you now.
It's a bit overwhelming, too. I mean, I didn't expect anyone to be reading every day. You know, sure. Even my mom didn't read every day. Plus, it's race. I mean, it's like these heavy issues.
Yeah.
So I would say it's been very positive, especially from people of color. I've gotten a lot of like thumbs up. Like, thank you for doing this. And like virtually no pushback from people of color. And then I've just had a little bit of pushback from other white people, basically just kind of being like, wait, what? Why are you saying that? And not believing the color, you know, that it's wrong to be colorblind. Which is hard because I feel like, I don't know. I've spent so much time researching it that so much of it now to me is clear, you know, that I sometimes feel like we're all seeing different realities. Hmm. And so that's been a little bit challenging, but overall it's been good. I mean, in the blogging world, there's not like tons of commenting anymore. So Sometimes I'm like, can you please give me feedback?
I know. Yeah.
I kind of wonder. Even if it's critical, you know, mm-hmm. I put it out there and that means I'm willing to be criticized.
Willing to dialogue, exactly.
Yeah. So
what do you think the most important thing, you said, this past month in your posts? Do you point to one and say that was probably the most important thing that I raised?
I don't know if it was the most important, but I got the most excited about it personally, was going back to my past in Florida and realizing that I was a part of a desegregation program that I didn't know I was a part of.
Wow.
And so I started researching and I found a document about integration from 1972 about the program they were putting in place. I was in school in the 80s then, but they were very hopeful. And so it was just, I also have heard this woman, Nicole Hannah Jones, writes a lot about segregation. And so I kind of researched her and she's sending one of her daughter to a segregated school. And as a teacher with my background, it was just fascinating to realize, like, I rode the bus an hour each way to school in sixth and seventh grade to go to school in a low-income neighborhood. And the purpose was desegregation. And I didn't know it. I mean, I knew. I kind of knew, but
It didn't register in the same way that it does today. Well, and I'm looking at that and going, you think that had a little bit to do with your thinking?
Oh, yeah.
And because of the things you saw and experienced? Of course it did.
Right. So I don't know if that was... I feel like I just kind of hit the tip of the iceberg on that.
Did your Southern mama say? Did your Southern mama say anything in that particular post? Did you write anything about that or talk about that with her?
Not in that post, but I might have mentioned it. I don't remember what I put in, what I didn't. But I later asked her. I'm like, how did you guys feel about me riding a bus an hour each way to go to public school? And she's like, you know, it was fine. And she said, really. So our school was separated by hallway. But a lot of the Florida schools, you know, it's all these outdoor hallways.
Right.
So I was on the honors hallway. So I actually had mostly white kids in my class.
Hmm.
So, you know, that also dawned on me. I'm like, the school was integrated, kind of, but the hallways were not integrated.
Hmm.
And so, I don't know. So, I mean, my mom was like, well, you know, you weren't with a lot of the tension. You weren't in attention, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you rode the bus, you went to your class, and you had maybe a handful of African Americans or kids from the neighborhood in your class. And then, so, yeah. So all the whole thing is fascinating. And it was working. I mean, when I read the all the documents and everything, I mean, the test scores were raised. Huh. Everything was improving. And then the school reached unitary status and everything. All the kids went back to their neighborhood schools. And now the school I went to is now like 70-something% African-American, low income. It's just, it's fascinating to me as a teacher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot to think about there with that.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What would you like us to take away? I mean, I know, again, I'm encouraging people, and I'll have the link at anitalustria.com for them to go to Scraping Raisins and read your whatever they want from your whole month of posts. But what would you be thrilled for us to take away?
I think what I am realizing is just the importance of listening.
Mm.
And learning and sitting with history, but also just not being defensive.
Mm.
And that's why I'm loving like Twitter and anytime I can listen to people of color. Even I would love to be listening to pastors, you know, African-American pastors every week on podcasts, you know, just because I am in an all white area or nearly all white. I just think it's really important to you listening and without judgment and without even feeling like I have to do something. So I don't know. I think that's just a start, is just caring, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think what I hear, and I'll kind of wrap things up, I hear your heart. You're hoping we will continue the conversation, that we'll have a conversation, that we will engage and think further. And, you know, I think if we just read what you've written, if we just grab one of your posts from the month of March and have a conversation with someone,
mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. You know, I guess mm-hmm. I just realize more and more it's one little step at a time. I want it to be, you know, like huge steps, leapfrog steps. It's not. And mm-hmm. just to have a step at a time to keep engaging more people in mm-hmm. in this conversation. And I am deeply grateful that you spent an entire month writing on these issues of race. Courageous and helpful and hopeful. And I will continue doing a variety of podcasts on, you know, just the larger issues, or larger topic of race along the way as well. So, hey, let's both keep at it, right?
Right. Thank you so much.
Leslie, thank you so much for being here on Faith Conversations. I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.